Okay, this hour we'll take full phone calls with Michael Tesserian, Architects of Control, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Michael, throughout this planet, not just here in this country, not here in North America, but throughout this planet, do you feel as if governments are trying to do the same thing with their population throughout the entire planet?
Well, yeah, because there really, to me, there is only one worldwide establishment. You know, it's a hydra. You know, yeah. There's many heads, but boy, oh boy. I mean, you only have to look at the colonial buildings, the design of the various state buildings from South America to Serbia, you know, all the way over to, you know, Hong Kong, you know, and even into Russia, to notice just by the architecture alone and the symbolism alone tells you it's one body with one agenda. It just, they have different, you know, sort of approaches, I guess, or different mini programs within the larger program. And, of course, they're expert at creating many covers for the program so that you don't see it. You know, this is, they're brilliant. They're experts at camouflage. But ultimately, when anybody's done even, you know, a short amount of cursory amount of homework into this whole movement of the world conspiracy and the architecture of control, they soon find out that it's just one leash for one neck, one program all the way.
Okay, let's go to the phones again. We go to Connecticut, Cindy, east of the Rockies. Hi, Cindy, go ahead.
Hi, George. I just love your show. I am a very long-time listener.
Well, thank you, Cindy.
And boy, I have a lot to tell you guys. I've been having every night that I go to sleep, I've been having this spiritual guide come into me, and he's been showing me weird things. And I'm just wondering if I'm the only person that is getting this. He's showing me that the elite is with two different types of entities, underground, and that some of the people from Atlantis survived, and that he's showing me that they are trying to do, like you suggest, the one world government, and because they know we are going to be visited pretty soon by a number of spacecraft. And they want to hurry up and get the agenda done before they come. And the collider that's in Switzerland, it'll never work.
You may be right about that. A couple scientists think that that they're coming back from the future to make it not work.
Yes, they said that it'll never work. And the entities that are with the elites that want to destroy the world and us, that they will never let that happen. And they know their time is limited, and this is why they're trying to do everything as fast. They don't know when they're coming. They didn't tell me when they were coming, but they said that they will be here. And that they said that some of them will want to go back. Like, people will think it's the rapture, and they will want to go in their spacecraft to leave the planet because they'll think it's the rapture when they do come, because there'll be millions of saucers.
All right, let's get Michael's thoughts on this, Cindy. Go ahead.
Well, I can certainly say that, you know, if Cindy has actually followed any of my work with the Atlantis book, you know, she'll know that I believe they've already been here for a long, long period of time. They do have off-world allies. I'll go so far as to say that. And they certainly, as we said earlier, have the various pan-dimensional, you know, guides. I mean, is it a coincidence, for instance, that one of the top scientists in the world, Craig Venter, he's a geneticist, you know, he's involved with a project that he actually calls the Archon Project, you know, Archon being the old Gnostic name for the demonic forces or the super angelic forces that, you know, govern the planet. And that, you know, again, looking at the symbolism, they name things Atlantis, Isis, Atlas, Illumina, Prometheus, Chalice, you know, the names, the Holy Grail logos and symbolism of the Knights Templar. So there is a tremendous agenda here behind this necromantic technology, not least just getting it to the state that it used to be in ancient times, but then using it. I mean, you know, they want to use it. They want to absolutely use it. And this goes for HAARP, and it goes for all of the different military complex things, and it goes for the Star Wars, which is still going on, you know. There's an enormous project here behind NASA and all of these different SRIs and what have you, you know, and just like Fedorovich said in ancient times, a lot of it is necromantic. A lot of it is about raising the dead. You know, there's even a theory that I dealt with in my work about, you know, the internment of the Nephilim, that they're in a sort of a comatose sleep state which Cindy was talking about, the underworld, you know, how the underworld factors into this.
Yep.
There's so many mythologies that talk about the sleeping ones ready to rise again. There's a huge theory there about that, and that that will involve various kinds of experimentation to sort of reanimate these original fallen angels of off-world blood, you know, the ancient Atlanteans. You know, I've often said that the myths of the ancient world are actually still to come, a lot of them. It's a bizarre concept.
Okay, very good. Next up, we go west of the Rockies, Jeff in Logan, Utah. Hey, Jeff.
Hey. Good morning, gentlemen. You know, I really appreciate what your mission statement is, and I really love your show, George.
Thank you.
Real quick, a couple of things. Your most recent caller, she reminds me of the Twilight Zone where they had a cookbook, How to Serve Man. All the UFOs
favorites
coming and taking away the people.
Yeah.
And the girl Donna before that, I got an argument with her. I'm of German-Jewish extraction, second generation. My wife is Mayan and Spanish from her mother's side, and her father was a black African. So I think we're kind of mixing things up pretty good over here without any prejudice.
For real, yeah.
As your guest was saying regarding the media, if you really look at Sesame Street, one of these things is not like the other one. That really, although they talked about they're trying to bring racial harmony, they really were showing how people are different, and I believe they were really encouraging racial disparity at that point. When we look at all the little white kids in Rowan, one of them was Chinese or black. One of these things is not like the other one. Regarding the architecture of society, as you're speaking of, you and I agree on the not being a shortage of oil and gasoline on the planet, and I think that this hype about energy efficiency is engineering family size. You see, the cars out here won't hardly hold two or three people. And what's happened to the family size? When I was a kid, we had a 9-passenger station wagon, mom and dad and 7 kids. I think they're engineering the family size with an energy hype requiring us to have smaller cars and therefore smaller families. I'll leave you to discuss that. Thank you for what you do.
Thanks, man. Good point. But do not get me started on Sesame Street. We'll have to have a 3-hour show just on that horror.
Are we programmed now, Michael? Have they gotten to us?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, that's part of the artificial, I call them remote controlled. We are basically remote controlled because remember, as I said, the time of gun to the head and jackboot in the face, they've done that. It's much more cushy for them, much greater sort of value, entertainment value for the leaders to have us literally, you know, jump when they say jump. And it's literally push the button and the remote control victim, you know, does his merry dance. It's that's what they really want, is a remote controlled, you know, non-individual right now, a smiling depressive.
Well, how much is a game for them?
It's not a game in its ultimate sense, but of course it like Sidney Webb and others, you know, they've described it as a game because the rules are like a game. And remember, we're part of that game. We are also pawns on that geopolitical board. And if we don't occupy the white squares of knowledge, somebody else will. You know, they want us on the black squares of ignorance, but we have the perfect right. And that's what my work emphasizes a lot, you know, is to step on to those white squares of knowledge and get informed about what's going on, not in fear, but as in a very proactive way, because we are many, they are few, and they are the ones who are truly in fear. A lot of people talk about, you know, we should be in fear of them, but as a matter of fact, they are in desperate, deadly fear of us, and that's why they have to use control, have to use power, and have to bring in their new world orders to keep everybody, you know, under the gun. And if they can't do it in one way, they'll do it pharmacologically, and they'll do it technologically, you know. And, of course, their old agenda, this is from the time of Bacon and Thomas Hobbes and Malthus. You talked earlier about this splitting of the masters are divided into two camps, and we talked about that. One other anecdote about that is that the men who worried that mankind might rise, the other group told them, look, the human makes the perfect slave, but what we'll do is we'll dumb down the human to the level of the machine, and then we'll have what we want. So don't wipe out the humans, you know, don't need to get rid of them. You just lower their level of consciousness to the level of the robotoid or the cyborg. You work on the hive mentality. You condition them through the media and so forth and so on to get them to be down on such a machine-like level that is what creates the perfect slave. Their thinking, in other words, is mechanical. Their emotional responses, and they're basically working just like the average, you know, Cyberman is basically the object of the game.
Good point. Let's go to Farmington, Missouri. Joshua, first-time caller. Hey, Joshua. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, Josh.
There's just a couple of things I wanted to touch on. Really, it's just one thing that's been bothering me for a long time. Where I work gives me a privileged position to kind of get into the heads of youth. I'm a child care worker at a level 4 lockdown facility. And I can't help but notice that more and more the media can not only help to show us what's happening to us, but is more of a can also be used as a tool to kind of aid these things along. Mm-hmm. One thing that I can't help but notice is that more and more with the teenagers that I'm a child care worker for, is the media teaches them the shows that they see and the things that they're into. It basically teaches them that, you know, how they're seen by their peers is more important than what kind of a constructive member of society they can be. I mean, kids today, it seems to me, are just being taught that being cool is more important than being smart or being empowered.
And peer pressure.
Well, I was just kind of wanting Michael's thoughts on my views and the things that I've noticed, if he's kind of noticed the same trends.
Well, I have, and sure I think have. That... First and foremost, you're not, when you deal with a, you know, teen or an adolescent, you're not really dealing with a teenager anymore. You're not dealing with a child. That innocence has long been slaughtered, you know. It's almost like the first agenda is to institutionalize their minds. And so you're not dealing with a person. I rarely see parents interact with their children as an actual person. They're dealing with a role, because that parent has subjugated themselves to the role. Whether they feel big about it or whether they're just ignorant, I don't know. But they're already caught in the roles, and the person to person, or the, let's say it even more succinctly, the human to human interactivity is basically null and void. And so therefore, what you're doing is you're now just giving a set of rules and a set of laws to a child, you know, asking that individual, that soul, to perform and you're adulterating its original spiritual and organic intelligence. You don't project trust on the child. You've got to try to micromanage everything that it's going to do in the outside world. You project your own fears, your own longings, and you're using your children as crutches. This is what I see a lot going on in the world. And, of course, the time will come for them to rebel, and the time will come for them to realize, because the natural intelligence within them will tell them that their parents or the establishment figures are broken. And then they will obviously go towards the Pied Pipers and the Dr. Strangeloves who are waiting out there in the media to give them the false models, you know, and we can list so many of them, which then they will identify with. And this is what is happening. It's just another form of colonialization on the mind of the child. You're not seeing a true child anymore. You know, that's pretty much null and void in today's world. And you're forcing and coercing them to be young adults long before their time, you know. And my mentors, like C.S. Lewis, you know, we just finished shooting a C.S. Lewis section in Belfast, so I had to review his work. And he, of course, you'll remember, wrote the beautiful Narnia Chronicles, you know. And even in the misinterpretation of these great men's work, in the kind of way that people have ignored, you know, what the great masters have said about how to raise children and how to keep them doubting and how to keep them skeptical and how to keep them questioning and how to help them with their curiosity, you know, to encourage that and to encourage free thought. You know, it's just continually prohibition. It's continually a state of the prohibitive as opposed to the permissive that is happening. And, of course, they will rebel against that. And that's the danger, because then they have nowhere else to go except to the media, which then, you know, sends them the worst possible memes that they then embody in their mind, so that when you're seeing them today, they look like they've just stepped out of an advertisement in Vogue magazine or off some billboard. They're completely, you know, I mean, just completely what you would call it, you know, the same as everybody. They've identified with all of these particular images that they see, some of them very, very negative, you know. And unfortunately, this is what happens when you have not strengthened their sense of organic intelligence, their natural flow of intelligence, which is very high when children are born. Children are incredibly knowledgeable and incredibly smart, but we work to destroy that natural intelligence. It's really tragic.
Why do people follow the Pied Piper? Why do they take that course?
Well, I got a feeling that because the people who've created these this dance, you know, are also experts. Let's give them that. They have some of the finest minds in the world. We can't fault them for that. They really do know their gig.
And master manipulators.
Thoroughly. Yep. What's that?
They're master manipulators.
They're master manipulators. And then, as I said, it's because they have taken away, remember, for every one negative teacher and for every negative or perverse ideology, there was a good one in its place. And that has been dumbed down, removed, and suppressed, which is a lot of the scholars and teachers that I work with in my work to try and help the world to know, you know, have been suppressed. You can't find their works. You can't find their books. Or we're programmed to believe, oh, it's very complicated to read these guys. It's all pie in the sky stuff. When in fact, it's incredible stuff, you know, that they've been mind-controlled into believing is very difficult and arduous, and they, all of these different taboos have been put on it. And so, you know, and then remember, as you said earlier on, people have had the rug pulled so much from under them that their focus now is on only the most narcissistic and domestic sort of minutiae, that they can no longer even function to widen the horizon, to go down to a library, to browse a library, to, you know, go and research certain things or whatever, you know. So, again, the pressures of just daily life, you know, it can also be a big part of it. And I always tell people that email me or contact me is that, look, there are no shortcuts. You have to make the time. You have got to make the time. You've got to show the courage to go the distance, just like anything you love, you know. But you're not going to be able to do it out of fear, and you're not going to be able to do it if you're not able to manage your time and economize your time and fall in love with knowledge and fall in love with this process. That's a very vital thing. And I think that also, you asked me earlier about 2012 and what I foresee and what we're at.
Yeah, yeah.
There is a downside of the Age of Awakening. I've always talked about the positive aspects of it, and anyone who's into 2012, you know, tend to think of it as a, you know, we're happy that we're in the Age of Awakening. But the Aquarian Age, if you want to use it that way, or more specifically this Age of Awakening, has a dark side, so to speak. And that is that the sort of planetary archetypes that rule that Age of Awakening, which is Uranus and Pluto, they are about breaking up structure. That's part of their good side, is that they break up the old Saturnian, you know, mortified, karmic, and orthodox patterns. But the problem that we're probably in now, and this is one of the reasons why you're seeing a lot of pessimism, is because it's okay to have those things broken up and changed. But in the interim, before a new thing is built, people feel very insecure. Even the people who loathe the Saturnian, you know, paradigm and want to see it pass away, they forget that that is a very ancient structure and you've become accustomed to it. So if you sort of deconstruct that, there will come a period of trepidation and a period of anxiety while that old paradigm passes away. This is what a lot of people are forgetting to mention. Because Uranus brings freedom, yeah. Uranus brings up the shaking up of an old established order. But Uranus also brings a lot of perversity and the opportunity to be fragmented and scattered and to go into all forms of perverse and absolutely, you know, self-destructive means. And in a way, so does Pluto do that. Pluto brings up what's buried, of course. The good aspects of Pluto is it brings up a lot of the buried content. It helps us face our shadow. It helps to loosen, again, old, deep-set emotional patterns. But the dark side of these forces is that they don't have a particular structure yet. They don't bring in structure or a new sort of order yet. And so there's a danger then that in the in-between time, we have what we have now, with people not able to see the future. They're moving from a state of great pessimism, you see. So that has to be borne in mind as well, that there's a healing curve here, and people should not feel pessimistic. It's just the nature of when you break a very old establishment that we've all become dependent on, there can be sort of its own trauma connected to that.
Let's come back with final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM with Michael Tesserian. Well, for you Streamlink members, Glynis McCants, the numbers lady, joins us on Tuesday night. And she'll be giving some numerological readings and insights about numerology as well and names. So should be fun. That starts at 8 p.m. Pacific time on Tuesday night for Streamlink members. And also next hour, we're going to be talking about the incredible ghostly Fort Wayne in Detroit, Michigan, with Wayne Miracle and Chris Forsythe. And when we come back, final phone calls with Michael Tesserian on Coast to Coast AM. You know, Michael, this control, it's happening everywhere. You know, it's in a store, it's in a restaurant, it's programming people's minds, and they're doing a great job doing it. They have learned how to do that, haven't they?
Yep,
and it's on multiple levels. The whole, even the whole infrastructures that are being created. But again, as I said, they are telling us in their own words. You know, I've got the quotes, I've got the information. You know, they're talking about the psycho-civilized world. They're talking about a civilization that's coming in which all individuality, you know, will be an anachronism. You know, they've put this in their own reports. For instance, Mankind 2000, it's a report people can go on and look up. It was funded by the SRI. It was funded by the Charles F. Kettering Foundation, which people in America will recognize, you know. And so these head foundations that are receiving our money, our taxes, our votes, you know, and we're not just talking about the GATT treaty or the NAFTA treaty. You know, we're talking about these technologically based treaties that are basically, you know, going to shape the entire future from now on all the way up to 2012 and beyond, you know. I mean, there's people like, you know, San Diego professor, for instance, Werner Vinge. He says, you know, I've got a quote here. He says, we're on the edge of a change comparable to the rise of human life on Earth. Within 30 years, we will have the technological means to create superhuman intelligence. Shortly after that, the human era will end. So it's not just Michael Tesserian making this up. You know, we have the top specialists from the top corporations, people with billions of dollars, not just the geneticists I mentioned earlier on or the philosophers of ancient times, but we have whole corporate structures right now who have got millions of dollars to spend on this. And the fundamental ideology, you know, of them, their profile, the profile of these people, these sociopaths, is that these are individuals who are incapable of seeing the natural inherent perfection either in the human body or in nature itself. And that is the clear definition of psychopathy. That is the clear definition of a sociopath, as somebody who is incapable, no matter even if you pointed it out to them, they're not capable of seeing that divine perfection. It's just simply not possible. And therefore, they are committed to hierarchical models, and they're absolutely obsessed with the the order and the organization of the human being in a very, very dehumanized way.
Okay, now we go to Raul in Toledo, Ohio. Hey, Raul, thanks for holding.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, George. I appreciate you guys having me in. Now, Mike, my question is with the morality and the breaking down and dumbing down of the youth, and, you know, I can relate. I'm only 25, so I'm just coming out of that. And we look for knowledge and we look for info. But what I'm seeing is the airways being flooded with the truth movement, with all these new bands that are coming out. It's really like manipulated resistance. Can you comment on that?
Yes, and remember, George and I, a few minutes ago before the break, we're talking about the dark side of the Aquarian Plutonian energy. In other words, if you want to use New Age parlance, the dark side of the Age of Aquarius, that's part of it. Unfortunately, Uranian energy brings in, you know, an unbelievable welter of diversity. You know, a lot of stimuli, probably too much in many ways. And, of course, that requires then a new kind of thinking. Pluto, you know, Uranus, it demands it. There's really no way around it. We have to accommodate. Of course, you know who the first victims are, is the older generation, because they grew up in the Saturnian mindset. They grew up under a very, very, regimented type of way of life, and therefore it's quite difficult for them to make the leap. I have always said that it's not just like a generation gap. It's more like a generation abyss that has opened up, you know. Then you add to that the speeding up of time itself, which many people, it's just like, you know, 5 years now, you have like almost 100 years of development in just 5 years. And then, as you're implying, there's just so much stimuli out there, so much information. My advice is really that there's no easy way. You know, I have to tell you that, Raul, there's just no easy way. A person's going to have to develop that sort of omnidirectional, you know, plastic sort of, you know, futuroid intelligence to not only get with this Uranian energy, but to try and sift through all this information as best they can and keep their minds as open as possible, doubt everything, doubt what I am saying, doubt what, you know, everyone says, find your own path, find your own road. Teachers can only be guides to you just like a signpost is. You know, we're not going to walk the road for you. This is the main thing. Too many people want to sort of territorialize this knowledge in the same way that you see a dog territorializing a lamppost. Well, that's not the way it works with knowledge. Each person must find their own light, and each person must, you know, get into that labyrinth and make the journey themselves. And I would say do it with an optimistic and very adventurous spirit like anybody would who was, you know, like Lewis and Clark did when they crossed the Rocky Mountains. You know, make it an adventure like you would a physical adventure.
Okay, back to the calls we go. Boulder, Colorado. Rex, it's your turn. Hey, Rex, go ahead.
Hello. Thank you so much, guys, for doing this and putting this on. And my question for Michael is regarding the recent the moon bombing situation with NASA and their supposed search for water. So your thoughts on that?
Well, this is covered extensively in my Atlantis book and DVD, and I connect it to a very, very ancient program. In ancient times, the Nephilim, the visitors, the fallen angels, the Anakim, whatever you want to call it, different traditions have different names for these characters. It happened that they were interned here. Some of the most incredible myths talk about the fact that they were interned here, meaning that they couldn't leave. They couldn't vacate the planet Earth. And that the moon, which is far larger than any other normal satellite of a planet, meaning that it could be artificial or it could be, as Emmanuel Velikovsky has said, a break off from the planet Jupiter, what have you, you know. The moon plays a key part in this stargate. That's the best word. The Native American Indians refer to it as the great web in the sky. It's called the Great Chain. It's basically a sort of an etheric barrier. And that's the reason why no man, no human being, nobody with alien DNA can cross through that. It doesn't mean that other beings couldn't come into our Earth from outside and all of these things. But certainly no alien being, that means you and me, anyone who has both the human and the alien DNA, according to my reading of this problem, cannot vacate the Earth. Now, the descendants of these Atlanteans, of course, they want to vacate. They want to. And they've not just now, but for many, many years, almost since 1960, and I think even in 1950, they set off detonations up there in the ionosphere and also on the moon. Every one of those detonations has backfired in their face. One of the detonations was so powerful, it actually created new belts of radiation. So it even made the problem worse. They were trying to open a corridor up there, you know, and it even made it worse. The ships that they're trying to pass by the barrier are useless to them. They've tried HARP technology. I talk about this in the Atlantis book. I got a chapter on that. HARP is basically used to superheat the ionosphere to try and penetrate it. These nuclear detonations are very much part of it. They may be also being used right now to sink foundations for these future colonies. You know, so there's a tremendous influence there. And, of course, they're going to tell you this. They're going to create a bunch of smokescreen stuff, you know. But if you do your homework, you'll find out there's a tremendous occult, not only occult symbolism in the moon itself, as a symbol of protection in occultism and magic. There's a tremendous symbolism behind the symbol of the moon in esoteric lore. But even technically, even the language that was used on the NASA landings, if you even believe in those landings, but even the occult terminology like the eagle has landed and what have you, you know, it's all loaded with various forms of symbolic symbolism that's being from the Habsburg dynasty and the Freemasons. It's really unbelievable, you know, when you get into it. But the moon, yep, that problem needs to be watched.
Richard C. Hoagland believes there are structures on the moon, Michael, and I assume you would agree?
I would agree. Those are probably ancient. Yeah, they're probably not recently made, right. But there's no doubt in my mind that the moon played a big part in the destruction of Tiamat and in the great cataclysms that took place in not-so-recent history, you know, definitely.
Let's go to Randy in Dayton, Ohio. It's your turn, Randy. Go ahead.
Hey, George.
Hey, Randy.
Michael, how you doing tonight?
Fine. Moondog, I know the voice.
Yes, sir. You know me. You know Moondog. Michael, the question I've got, it's really no question. I compliment you on your thoughts on control. But, you know, we know better. But we're not exercising that right. And it's just it makes me think of Pink Floyd, the wall. You can't have your pudding unless you eat your meat. You know
that's
what I'm saying?
So true.
I hear you.
And we know better. And as far as control, I have to fight every day for what I believe in and what I have to go through every day. I have to fight for it.
It's never given to us. We have to struggle for it. That's just the bottom line.
But. You know, I appreciate your information. The information you gave us were amazing, and it's just like George, coast to coast, they can't take it from us. And the information that we get helps us in our everyday lives, and we are like puppets on a string.
Yeah,
but we do have scissors.
Well, I think
I like that.
I think also, Randy, the most important thing to remember when we're dealing with this on a daily life, day-to-day basis, when we're meeting these creatures and we're meeting their mannequins and we're meeting their agents and we're meeting the people who are just completely sold to this lie, is to really remember that in the end of the day, their only really true freedom that ever has existed on this planet is attitudinal. It exists in you. It's not something that really is a political thing in a way. If you really get down into the nitty-gritty of it, how can freedom ever really be bestowed by any other agency except yourself? You know, some of the freest men have been locked up in prisons for very, very long times. Many of them have been even locked in dungeons, you know, in ancient times. Yet they were free because they were free in their mind. They're free in their consciousness. That can never be taken from anybody. You know, this was brought out beautifully by Patrick McGoohan in his series, The Prisoner. And there's been many other wonderful, you know, shows and books and stories that talk about this. And it's absolutely true. So we shouldn't even be pessimistic because it begins and ends with ourselves. We are the alpha and the omega of it. And they have seduced us, of course, like you're implying, to believe that our freedom, our goods, our prosperity is in their hands or the hands of a boss or the hands of a patron or a mentor or what have you. Absolutely not. Absolutely no way. Nobody has our prosperity. Nobody has our spiritual welfare. We are its keeper. We can only be seduced into believing that it exists in somebody else's hands. And that's the beginning of the problem. We have to, in other words, take back our power, you know.
Moondog, of course, with the NighthawkZone.com. Let's go to South Bend, Indiana. TJ, you're up with us.
How you guys doing?
Okay, T. Go ahead.
Going back to the control thing, Michael, are you familiar with memetics?
No.
Memes. A meme is...
Oh, like yes, of course.
Yes, and okay. Through your work, I discovered the memes. But I found it through a book called Virus of the Mind.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of people should really get into this because it is the method on which everything, the ideas of control get passed on from person to person, and they don't even see it.
That's right. Yeah, you're not meant to see it. You're not meant to see it. It's to remain totally invisible. And in fact, you're meant to embody it and imagine that it's your own. The beauty of this is that this is how deep and this goes, is that they introduce these ideas in various ways, even generationally, and then we imagine we have come up with it. This is what they do throughout the teen world, for instance, you know, where they introduce these different memes and they make it trendy and chic, but they even do it on other levels too. It's even within the intellectual movement. And then with that comes the prejudices that say, we have got the truth, you don't, you know. Like I said, people trying to territorialize that type of knowledge. Knowledge is for everyone. It's not just for elites. It's for every human being that exists. But they've dumbed everyone down to the level where they go, well, that's just too big for me. I can't get my hands around that. It's just too big of a potato to carry, you know. We all got to realize it's ours. It's our legacy, you know, and watch for these memes and watch how they insinuate themselves into our minds. It's very crucial, and I've done a lot of work on that. And I'm glad to see a lot of other people right now are really on to that. And how they do it in our life space by the statues and the civic monuments that they put up, you know. And the billboards with all these hidden messages and so forth and so on. And if you go to my forum, we have a symbolism page there that I think you'll love. It's got some great information on it there. And also in the DVD, Architects of Control, we've got some great stuff on that in there as well.
Do you believe, Michael, that the swine flu is part of this manipulation, part of this control?
Yeah, it's part of the whole trepidation act. It's the same thing with Al Gore and his whole biosphere, global warming, not malarkey. And it hits us on many fronts. And it's often where they take psychological content that we should be working on psychologically, and then what they do is they project it outward as to an outward trauma. And so there's a whole symbolism involved in this, a whole ritualistic, cultic thing going on when they introduce this fear. Because, of course, obviously, it's biological. If there's a flu or a disease out there, then we respond in a certain kind of emotional way to that, which actually lowers the immune system through anxiety. It's a feedback loop. That you will get sick, not from the actual thing they're telling you get sick from, but from the anxiety of imagining that there's, you know, some sort of monstrosity out there, or again, some unseen epidemic. This has an effect on the psyche because, as Jung said, all the real epidemics are human. They're all based in psychic epidemics, you know, and they're able to manipulate this by constantly, you know, creating these ghouls and goblins to scare the bejesus out of us so that actually not only our moral foundations are destroyed, but even our biological immunity is reduced drastically.
Let's go to Kelly in Tucson, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Kelly.
Hello. Hey, I really want to applaud you, Michael and George, for all your efforts and quite a few things that you've said tonight, really, I've really picked up on. And, you know, if there's anything that I can say is that if I die tomorrow, I feel like I haven't gone with the herd mentality, which I think we're all kind of being herded into whatever game, you know, our government or all these groups, identifiable or not, want us to play into. And I really feel that you even said, you know, don't believe, go with your own gut instinct. And I think that's really commendable. So thank you for saying that. But
thanks, Kelly. You know, thank you very much for that.
Yeah. My question is, I'm a parent, and I kind of feel like sometimes when I hear something or see something in the media, it's like you know your kid's lying to you, and I hate to use, I don't want to make it seem like teenagers are lying or anything, but you know how like when you feel like you've been lied to, or there's a diversion of some sort, so they tell you one thing and it's to divert your attention so that you don't see the other thing going on, what left hand is doing while right hand is manipulating. Something funny hit me when they had come out only, 3 days or so before the missile had hit the moon. They were talking about it and talking about it. Of course, I didn't notice that they were talking about how much it was going to cost to do that. But they shot this missile off to the moon. And shortly thereafter, then Obama got, you know, like the Nobel Peace Prize, which I thought was just like out of nowhere. Like, here, you're going to hit the moon, and we don't really want to talk about how much it's going to cost. But hey, and our president just got this great award that we weren't even thinking that, you know, he was going to win, because I don't really even know why he won it. But, and then a few days after that, he got canonized, I heard, from the Pope. So,
well, a lot of strange things are happening. Michael, we're out of time. Very quickly, get your website out for us, please.
Well, again, they can get the DVD by going to MichaelTessarian.com and hitting on the Architects of Control link. That'll take them straight there to read up on it and order it. And if they want to take part of becoming the Time Gnosis site, which deals with my numerology system, that's free membership. Just go to the Time Gnosis link, and they can get both the DVD and the free membership that way. Just head over to the Michael Tessarian page, and they'll be able to see the links from there.
Very good. Thanks, Michael. Up next, pre-Halloween continues on Coast to Coast AM.